This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, number 66. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliff in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, we pick the brains of our batting coach, Gary Palmer. And as usual, we answer your questions for this week. You went to the ECB conference, David, recently over the weekend. How was that?
Yeah, that was a really enjoyable weekend. Got to meet a lot of coaches from all around the country and also from around Europe. And I know there was one chap there, he came as far as from India. So I think the real benefit of something like that isn't the lectures and the practical things, although they are good. But it's more the chance to meet people and discuss ideas and talk about different things with other coaches who you'd never get the chance to meet normally. So that was enjoyable. The theme of it was character, captaincy and leadership. They had Sir Ian McGeoghegan, who was the Lions coach in the last Lions tour, when they were inches away from being a victorious Lions team. So he was interesting. He had his approach on coaching and leadership. But there was good. There was other stuff as well. I went to a good presentation about how you can help fast bowlers become more streetwise and become more tactically aware. That was quite interesting. And also how the wicketkeeper, the psychology of the wicketkeeper. You know, it's not just about, you know, you have to be the cheerleader. It's a bit more. There's a bit more to it than that. And that was quite interesting. And that was from the former Sri Lankan assistant coach, Paul Farbrace, and he's now coaching at Kent. So, and he used to be a first-class wicketkeeper. So that was really interesting. And then they were talking about also, they talked about the spirit of cricket, you know, and how far can you push it and all that kind of thing. So
it's interesting, David, as you mentioned, how they're sort of not really touched really deep into the technical aspects in this conference, but they've actually touched on character, leadership, and all those other aspects, maybe showing that that's how cricket is at the moment. Because if there was a conference like this, say, 10, 15 years ago, they'd be really honing down on the technical side and everything. But nowadays, things are really deeper than that. There's a lot more to that than there's a lot of mental strength, character stuff that brings into it that makes a player a good one. So yeah, it's a nice side that the ECB has decided to look at, and they've decided to sort of inform the coaches about, which is a good thing to see.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think obviously you've got to have a good technique or a good understanding of coaching technique if you're a coach before you do anything else. But then when you get to the level where you've got that sorted and you know how to coach technique, then yeah, the next thing is to develop your ability to create players who are mentally strong, and they've got, you know, that word character. You know, what does that really mean? What does someone with character do? And can you coach it? Can you teach yourself to have character?
Yeah.
But you played. You actually did. You were you had your face against the grindstone.
Yeah, that's right, David. Well, just speaking about character, and our team needed exactly that on the weekend. We lost the toss and we had to bowl first in 42-degree heat. Whoa. Celsius. It was really hot, and we had a lot of drinks on the sideline, but we managed to pull through and we got the other team out for 118, which I thought was pretty good on a hot day. Fast outfield and pretty small boundaries as well. And we got to bat towards the end of the day, and we were 30-for-1 at the end of the day. So hoping to really go out aggressive in the week coming up and try and get the total as quick as possible and put them back in to maybe try and win outright, which is our aim, to try and make the finals. So there's no point being defensive from here, Dave, as our captain was saying. So we have to try and be as aggressive as we can.
Do you think it was good bowling by you then to keep the runs from being scored? Was that a tactic to just slow down the scoring rate, or was it just one of those days where but nobody could get the ball off the square for some reason.
I think it was actually good bowling, David, and a lot of good field placings as well. We had a really aggressive offside field, and we tend to bowl outside off stump. Mm-hmm. So if the batsman wanted to try and hit us on the leg side, they had to play from outside off stump, which was really risky for them. So they didn't take the risk, and I think they got frustrated by trying to find the gaps outside the off stump, and in the end, they had to pay the price. So I think the bowlers stuck to their plans, and the field placings were pretty good as well, which was in the end instrumental to us bowling them out for such a low total.
So what was your tactic? To bowl outside the off stump, get them going at the ball, and because obviously if they're bowling outside off stump, your natural instinct is just to leave it until you get something a bit straighter. So you were aiming sort of the fifth stump, as they say.
Yeah, basically we were aiming to wear down their patience, David, because we knew that if we let their batsmen get away, they'd go on to make a massive total. I mean, three of their batsmen are in the top five batting averages for our competition. So it just shows how strong their team is in batting. So we decided that we didn't want to give them an inch, so we have to try and make them to make the mistakes. In the end, it worked. So we're pretty happy with that.
What field did you... What was a typical field then? So you're bowling outside off stump. You'd have... how many... What would the split be? 6-3, something like that? 7-2?
Yeah, we had three on the leg side, being a fine leg, square leg, and mid-on. So we had a massive gap in mid-wicket, and everyone else just packed the offside. So it was really tricky for them to try and get to that period. And I think we bowled the right length as well. Didn't let them... Because if we bowled too short, they could just pull everything through mid-wicket. Yeah. But we bowled the right length, and that helped as well towards the end.
And was the ball doing much? Was it moving around a bit, or was it gun barrel straight?
No, it was straight as, David. It was a hot... When we bowled to them, there was no wind at all. It was really hot.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we had swing in the first few overs. But then after that, we had nothing at all. So we just had to dig in, bowl the right lines, and make them make the mistakes.
And how did you bowl?
I didn't bowl as well as I thought I should have, David. I opened for our team. I managed to get my line from my second and third over, but they still managed to get runs of me, which was a bit of a downside, but I managed to pull through, David, and for seven overs, I gave away 26 runs, which was not bad, but it's not good as well.
Any wickets?
I was talking... No wickets at all, which was the downside. I haven't got wickets in two games now, which is a bit of a disappointing thing for me, but I was talking to my captain and I was telling him maybe we should give one of the other bowlers to open.
What's your job in the team when you open the bowling? Has your captain sort of made it clear what he wants you to do?
Yeah, he has, David. My job is mainly to hold up an end, because the bowler at the other end is sort of the express bowler who gets most of the wickets. So I just have to keep it tight at this end, create pressure, and hopefully they'll try and get some runs from the other end and get out. So I'm trying to create pressure from my end. And if I couldn't create pressure in this end, which I didn't effectively this game, even though we bowled them out for a low total, then I'm not really performing to my responsibility in the team. So, yeah.
So what would keeping it tight be? 2.5 and over, something like that?
Yeah, at least under 4 and over.
And when you bowl a bad ball like that, how do you what goes through your head? Do you steel yourself to sort it out, or do you think, oh, here we go again? Or what's your thinking when an over starts going wrong? How do you recover from something going wrong?
I do tend to think about it too much sometimes, David, but I try and clear my head as much as possible. I mean, it's really hard when you bowl, say, three bad balls in a row to clear your head of absolutely everything.
One of the good things that we talked about in the conference was how the bowler thinks about things as he's walking back to his mark.
Yeah.
And the Gloucestershire bowling coach told us what he encouraged his bowlers to do was to split the walk back into three separate phases, if you like. And so you bowled the ball, whatever's happened, you're standing at the end of your follow-through, aren't you? Well, usually anyway. Then so you take the time from wherever you are in your follow-through back to the stumps to just not think about anything. Just clear your mind totally. Just think about something completely different, what you're having for dinner that night or whatever. Then when you get to the stumps, That's your sort of relaxation time, if you like. Then when you get to the stumps, then you start thinking about the last ball. You know, what happened, or it was a good ball, I beat the bat, or, you know, I drifted down the leg side a little bit. Whatever it was, you kind of review what happened, and you think, right, did I want to do that? If I did want to do that, yes, it was good. Right, fantastic. If I didn't want to do that, okay, well, we're going to have to work on it a little bit. Then about halfway back, when you get about halfway back to your mark, then you start thinking about the next ball. Okay, you know, I've bowled two bad balls this over. This next ball, I'm just going to focus. You know, I'm not going to do anything clever. I'm not going to try a slower ball or, you know, go wider on the crease or anything. I'm just going to run up and put it on the spot or whatever your plan is. Make your plan for that next ball. And then by the time you get to the end of your mark, all you've got in your head is what you're going to bowl the next ball, because you've already relaxed. You've already reviewed the last ball. You're not thinking about that anymore. You're ready to bowl the next ball. So you turn and then you just run in and bowl the next ball.
I think that sounds effective, Dave, because I think me in general and bowlers in general as well, what they do tend to do is think about different things at the same time. So while at the top of the mark, they think about the previous ball as well as the ball they're about to bowl as well, which sort of muddles up with their head a bit, which I think leads to a lot of confusion when they bowl again. So
yeah, give that a try. Get into that rhythm of doing that and see if you can see if it makes a difference to you.
Okay, we're back again to pick the brains of our batting coach, Gary Palmer, who was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps young players in the game with CCM Academy. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer.
Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, David. Hope you're well.
Very well, thank you. Yes, we've got a question about guard this week, and it's from Sav. And Sav asks, is there ever a time when you would take a middle and off stump guard?
If I knew then what I know now, how many times have we heard that? If I was playing against an off spinner turning the ball quite a lot, I would take a middle and off, or even an off stump guard, because it means that, you know, if the bowler has to bowl at the stumps generally, and if you take an offside guard or a middle and off guard, it means that you're going to be playing more shots with the spin sort of straight back up the wicket or towards mid off. You know, if you were to go to the other extreme and take leg stump and the off spinner is bowling outside off stump turning the ball into you, and, you know, you're forever playing, you know, against the spin, because he's bowling or she's bowling that offside line. You step across to the line, the ball turns in, and all you can do is really play around your front pad with half a bat. So if you think about moving over on the stumps more, and the line of that ball now has become straighter to where you are, therefore by the time the ball's turned, you know, you're now starting to open up and go with it and play with the spin.
Would that be the same for a quicker bowler, a swing bowler?
An in-swing bowler, yes. I think I'd probably take middle and off as a guard. Again, because you're letting the ball come into you and you're playing with the swing, and you should be playing it back up the wicket if it's reasonably straight. Again, if you took leg stump guard, that ball's hooping into you and you feel that you've got to try and play it towards the offside because of the line of the ball, and you're quite a lot leg side of the ball. In some ways, you're playing into the bowler's hands, aren't you? If you go across your stumps a bit more, take middle and off, open up slightly as the ball swings, let it swing, play with the swing in the V. It minimises how many shots you're going to look to play on the offside against the swing or turn, which is what that bowler wants you to do to get you out or to get you to make a mistake. Because it's harder playing against the spin than it is with it.
Are there any dangers to taking a slightly unorthodox guard like the middle and off guard?
Got to get, make sure sometimes you don't go too far across and get bold leg stump, you know, so the ball goes down the leg side, outside the line of your pads, you know, leg side of your body, and it just flicks the leg stump.
If you want tips and drills from Gary Palmer, you can access Pitch Vision Academy on www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Welcome to the question section for this week. David, our first question is from Seb, who's a keeper, so it's right down your alley.
Mm-hmm.
He says, as a keeper, I was wondering if you had any drills or methods to improve reflexes. The last two games, I've dropped pretty hard chances, but I want to be taking them. I think I just take my eye off the ball. Now, what do you reckon, David? Is he not practicing enough, or is there something he should be doing?
Well, I think maybe he's asking the wrong question. He wants to improve his reflexes because he dropped the catch. So he's thinking, I've dropped the catch. I must have not got there in time. So I must have not. I must have reacted slowly. So I must need to improve my reflexes. I mean, it could be more of a technical or a mental thing, really. With a lot of catches, especially when you're standing back, it's not about reflex. It's about being in the right position at the right time,
yeah.
And then just catching. Well, just catching the ball, but you know, do you know what I mean? It's just, it's about, you know, that when it's like when you talk about great football goalkeepers, someone like Gordon Banks. Although he had amazing reflexes, you know, he could, you know, when he needed them, he had them. But most of the time, whenever there was a shot, he very rarely had to dive for it because he was always in the right position. It just always seemed to come straight to him.
Yeah.
So it's a bit similar with wicketkeeping. If you're in the right position, you don't need to dive. You don't need to throw yourself about because your footwork is quick. Your hands are good. Your eyes are good. And you just get to the ball. And the good wicketkeeping coaches, they look at the head, they look at the hands, they look at the feet. They don't really look at reactions and those kind of things because the reactions tend to look after themselves.
Mm.
And one of the key things that I heard once, I can't remember where I heard it from, but I have said it on the show before, is you're looking to always catch in slow motion to get to the ball so you don't need to have a fast reaction because you're already there, so you're trying to... You know, it's almost like you're catching in slow motion. It's like a, you know, a TV replay of the catch, and that makes it a lot easier. The ball nestles in the gloves nicely, and you don't have to worry about too much about the drop catches.
Yeah,
because if you're worrying about your reflexes, you might tense up, and if you're tense, of course, you're not doing the basics properly. Because under tension, people tend to forget the basics unless they're really well drilled.
Yeah.
So quick and relaxed, even when you're diving. I would suggest doing footwork drills, making sure your footwork's good, making sure your hands are good by getting someone to hit tennis balls to you before play, so your hands are nice and relaxed, because with tennis balls, they bounce out a lot easier, so you have to have a lot more relaxed hands. Get your hands out in front of you when you're catching the ball. Don't catch the ball from close into the body, a mistake a lot of wicketkeepers make. Is they don't get their hands out in front of them. If you don't get your hands out in front of you, you tend to be on your heels. And if you're on your heels, you can't move as quickly. So get your hands out in front of you. Work out in front of you. Catch the ball out in front of you. Mm. And practice. Practice hard. Some wicketkeepers don't need to practice. Paul Farbrace at the ECB conference said that he once was... doing some coaching before a Sri Lanka India game, and MS Dhoni took his wicketkeeping gloves out to the warm up, left them on the floor for the warm up, didn't touch them the entire warm up, walked off, and someone brought them in for him. he kept impeccably in that game. Some wicketkeepers just don't like to practice. They don't need to practice. They're happy with just doing it, and some are obsessive about practice. I can't remember his name now, but the Test Sri Lankan wicketkeeper.
Jaya Wardner,
I think. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Jaya Wardner. Yeah, he is a very good wicketkeeper. And again, Paul Farbrace said he was obsessive about practicing. So you've got to do what you feel is right. If you feel that you're going to get confidence from lots of practicing and making sure your technique is dead on, then do it. It's not like batting, say, where... You know, you probably should practice, well, however much you practice, you probably should practice a bit more. You don't necessarily have to do that. Me as a keeper, I get confidence from doing my warm-ups, doing lots of warm-ups, getting my feet moving, getting my hands strong and soft, getting in position, feeling like I'm ready. And then my hands don't feel hard and my feet don't feel like I'm, you know, like they're flat on the ground. But some other people wouldn't need to do that.
All right, David, our next question is from Sammy, and he says... You mentioned before how important it is to have a role in the team. Sometimes that role changes depending on what is happening in the game. How do you know when to change? David, I don't know exactly if a role, your role, can change in the middle of a game. I'm pretty sure it can change, like, over a season, but can someone's role in a team change during a game, David?
I think so. If a plan isn't working and it needs to change, I think your role can change. For example, if the tactic of bowling outside the off stump and setting an offside field was not working, there was a batsman who was just flaying everything through the covers.
Yeah.
You know, and he scored 50 in no time.
Yeah.
Then at some point you're going to have to change your plan because it's not working. So I think that's where you need to develop that instinct of knowing when a plan isn't working.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. And that can be quite subtle sometimes. I mean, you know a plan's not working if you're bowling and the score's 200 for naught. It's pretty obvious that whatever plan you're doing hasn't worked so far.
Yeah.
And so you need to change it. But it's when the game's in the balance and it could go either way. Do you stick with the plan that you've already decided? Or do you have this sort of sixth sense, this instinct that something else will work? That's what makes a really good cricketer, is someone who can get that instinct to change a plan or to know when it's time to do something. Michael Bevan, if we're talking about batting, Michael Bevan is the classic example in one-day cricket.
Yeah.
He knew exactly when a boundary was needed. And then he scored one.
Exactly.
So not only did he have the kind of instinct, the ability, the nous, if you like, but he also had the skill to pull it off whenever he needed to, which is also important. So it helps to know a range of different tactics. So you just don't go in with one plan and then mindlessly, robotically follow that plan no matter what happens until it's too late. It helps to be thinking all the time. And some people are naturally sort of students of the game, if you like. I think probably you and I fall into that category. Otherwise, we wouldn't spend half an hour every week talking about it. but some people sit back a bit and they let the captain do the work. They don't think about it. And when they go out to bat, they play their natural game, if you like, in inverted commas, their natural game. And they don't think about the game situation. But you've got to have a bit more nous than that. If you're a slogger, but the game doesn't need a slogger. It needs someone to chase a target down over a period of 25 overs, and you need to be there, not out at the end. Then you can't be swinging from the laces right from the beginning. You've got to have a little bit more nous than that.
Yeah.
And it helps to have tried these different tactics as well, and that only really comes with experience. You can only do so much in the nets when it comes to tactical stuff. You've got to have been out in the middle and tried bowling wide outside the off stump, tried bowling around the wicket, tried hitting the ball over the top because you can't pierce the inner ring if you're batting. And the other thing, of course, is to be able to have a clear mind under pressure, like we were talking about walking back to your mark and being able to clear your mind by breaking it down into three stages. Exactly the same as a bat, exactly the same thing for a batsman and for a fielder. You need to be able to clear your mind of all these different options that you've got. Even though you've got them, you might have six or seven different options available to you.
Yeah.
You want to think about all those six or seven different options, choose the right one and go with it. As you were saying earlier, what you don't want to be doing is standing at the top of your mark thinking, what am I going to do now? I could try and bowl a bit straighter. I could try bowling around the wicket. I could try going wider on the crease. I could try a slower ball. I could try digging in and try and getting up around his ribs. All these different thoughts in your head, you should have already decided what you're going to do by the time you get to the top of your mark, and then just go with it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a hunch. You don't even think about it. You don't make a list in your mind of 10 different things and then pick one randomly, or you know, go through all the benefits and the downsides of all the different ones. You just get something in your head, something by the way the batsman's standing, something by the way the bowler is holding the ball slightly differently at the top of his mark, something about what the fielders are doing. You just get this nous, this instinct that something isn't either isn't right or is right, and you're going to try something, or you're going to. It's almost impossible to describe, because it's like your subconscious mind is taken over, and you just get a hunch, and you think, I think this is probably going to work.
Yeah.
And you can't say why it's going to work or when it's going to work, and sometimes it doesn't work, but you'd be surprised how many times it does work. And the only way you get that, I think, anyway, I don't think you can coach that. I don't think you can go into the Nets and say to someone, this is how you do it, and here's a list of all the different things. I think you just develop it over time, as long as you're open to the possibility of doing lots of different things, and you don't give away your thinking to somebody else, to the captain or to somebody else. You can't rely on anybody else to do your thinking for you, especially not in cricket.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think? Do you ever sort of change your plans when you're bowling? Do you ever think, this just isn't working, I'm going to do something else?
Yeah, all the time, David. And most of the times, like sometimes it goes wrong, sometimes it turns successfully. But I think, as you said, David, you can't just sit back and wait for someone else to change it for you. You have to sort of take a risk. I mean, consult with your captain, of course. But as you said, exactly right. You have to take a risk based on instinct, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then you can either go back to plan A or try something different.
Yeah, it's important to... I mean, obviously, if you're batting, you can't really consult with the captain.
Yeah.
But you've always got the non-striker to talk to, you know, your batting partner to talk to.
Yeah.
About whether you think it's going to... You think, oh, hang on a minute, I reckon I can hit this bowler over the top. What do you think? Is it worth the risk, you know? And if you trust the other guy, then you know you can work together like that. But yeah, as a bowler, and I do it as a wicketkeeper as well. Because often the captain's standing next to me at slip, because you know that's the captain's prerogative, isn't it, to be able to stand at slip?
Yes.
And I'll just turn to him and go, I reckon we need a second gully for this bloke because he's playing with an open face. Or we should bring in the men, the mid wicket and cover, extra cover in on the drive, because he looks like he's going to drive it in the air. And you know, the captain might take that idea or leave it, but it's there, that you put it in the head, and you keep thinking about it all the time.
Well, you can get more tips and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the My Cricket Coach show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 5th of February. So if you have any questions or you want to get in touch, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.